KALW.
We had a name for every peak, every stream, every creek, ditch, puddle, you know, I mean, everything.
Alpine County's been working for 3 years to change the name of a mountain peak named after a Confederate president.
For us to have the ability to start putting names, Washoe names, the way they should be, back into these places, it's really important.
Then the musical Hamilton is giving high school students a new way to see and hear history.
We see these figures as perfect, they're amazing, and it's shocking to me that we never get that other side of the story in a normal classroom.
And we'll head to the west side of Golden Gate Park where marksmen and women take aim.
Raise up, draw back, one, two, let go.
That's coming up. I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Around the world, people are removing monuments depicting and named after controversial historical figures. Here in San Francisco, statues of Junipero Serra, Ulysses S. Grant, and Francis Scott Key all were toppled last month. These removals happened during and following the recent protests against police killings of Black people. But that's not the case with every landmark. From our partner station, Capital Public Radio, Scott Rodd visited a remote mountaintop in rural California to report on a renaming effort that's been years in the making.
The hike to Jeff Davis Peak in Alpine County doesn't follow a clear trail, so I find myself dodging low-lying brush and stubborn patches of snow to reach the top. The peak is named after the president of the Confederate States. Historians say that likely came from residents of a nearby mining village. Many were immigrant sympathizers of the Confederacy. A campaign launched in 2017 to rename the landmark, but it would soon get stuck in the molasses of overlapping bureaucracies. Community members first debated the issue at an Alpine County board meeting.
These named landmarks raise useful questions in the minds of young people who see them.
And I don't think that history really needs to be changed or rewritten.
Alpine County Confederate history should go into the museum. It doesn't need to be flaunted from a mountaintop.
County Supervisor Ron Hames had a novel take on the issue.
I actually renamed it 35 years ago when I found out what the name was. I renamed it after a Frank Zappa concert. The concert was called It's Frickin' Great to Be Alive.
Frank Zappa actually used a different F-word, one that's not suitable for county board meetings or public radio. But Hames went on to make a larger point. Descriptions of physical landmarks change all the time. He says Spanish missionaries had names for what they found in California, and before them, so too did Native Americans.
We had a name for every peak, every stream, every creek, ditch, puddle, you know, I mean, everything.
Irvin Jim is chairman of the Washoe Tribe's Hungalelti community. Alpine County asked the tribe to recommend a new name, so Jim went to his great-aunt, a Washoe elder, who suggested Dayek Dalgoet, which means saddle between two points.
For us to have the ability to start putting names, Washoe names, the way they should be, back into these places, it's really important.
The county board approved the name, and then it went to the state. But the California Advisory Committee of Geographic Names rejected it at first. The committee found the Washoe phrase hard to pronounce. Plus, they said it had no local association. Jim has some thoughts on this.
Typical white society thing to say. This is our homeland. Over 10,000 years of being here. They don't understand. They don't know.
As for Jefferson Davis's association with Alpine County, well, you'd be hard-pressed to find one. In fact, Davis vehemently opposed the creation of California altogether, because it would be a free state without slaves. The committee eventually gave their approval. They declined an interview request, but said they take renaming landmarks seriously and are scrupulous with their decision-making. That's one reason the process can take so long.
It may sound straightforward to say, well, we want to change a name or we want to apply a new name.
Jennifer Runyon is with the Federal Board of Geographic Names. Yet another agency that has to sign off on the change.
There's just so many moving parts. It really is a matter of getting input from so many different entities.
She says the proposal will likely appear on the board's July calendar, the final hurdle to rename the peak. On the mountain's eastern slope, melting snow forms a brook that carves below the tree line. It's crystal clear, it's frigid cold, and its name is Jeff Davis Creek. Some residents have contacted the Federal Board of Geographic Names to ask whether it will be renamed too. But the process for that hasn't even started. In Sacramento, I'm Scott Rodd.
That story came to us from our partners at Capital Public Radio. Before any name change to the Jeff Davis Peak becomes official, the U.S. Board on Geographical Names would have to sign off, which may happen at their meeting tomorrow. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Well, Broadway shows will not return to the Bay Area until 2021, but you can see Hamilton. The musical about founding father Alexander Hamilton has gone from the big stage to the small screen. Although originally planned for movie theaters, Disney Plus is streaming the Hamilton film instead because of the coronavirus. Before the pandemic, KALW's Janae Darden went to a special matinee production of the show for high school students at the Orpheum in San Francisco. She reports on how those young people are using art to tell the stories of the people left out of the history books.
Oh my God!
It's an early Wednesday morning. The sidewalks on Market Street in San Francisco are damp. A line of teenagers and teachers wraps around the Orpheum Theater. About 2,000 people are here. The students appear both excited and tired. Some of these kids are from the Bay Area. Others travel from as far as Fresno and Sacramento. Tickets can easily run around $100, but today they are $10 max. And many of these kids are from Title I schools, which have large populations of low-income students. For some, this is their first Broadway musical, but today is no ordinary show. This is Eduham. All of the Hamilton companies in the U.S. do this, but today's event in San Francisco happens to be the 100th Eduham. Before this big day, students spent upwards of 2 weeks studying a special history curriculum from Hamilton. Then they interpret what they learned through art. And any minute now, some will perform their history-inspired pieces on the Orpheum stage in front of the other high school students. They're like the opening act before the show. At the Boston Massacre, it was out there tripping. The crowd of teens nod their head along to an original rap song by Tyreek Stewart, a student from John Muir Charter School in Sacramento. Heads sway to a sweet serenade about the wives of the founding fathers by students from Heritage Peak Charter School in Sacramento.
My darling John. I wish you would write me a letter half as long as I write you. By candlelight, I had sweater.
And then a spoken word piece from a couple of students rocks our collective minds.
Sally Hemings!
Did they say Sally Hemings?
That is my name. Seems to be the only thing that's mine. Funny how your life can be shadowed under someone else's name. Can you imagine? Imagine being overpowered by a man?
I'm surprised. When I was in school back in the 90s, teachers seemed to avoid discussing Sally Hemings because she was enslaved by Thomas Jefferson. One of the poets you heard, Ariana Marin, attends Avision Academy of Arts and Technology in Oakland. She learned a lot about Hemings from the Eduham curriculum.
But the thing that shocked me the most was that she did have a relationship with Thomas Jefferson, but nobody knew if it was consensual or if she wanted it. And the fact that she had children with him as well, and 6 children, which was a lot, it was kind of like, wow, like, that's crazy.
What's really crazy? Hemings was 16 during her first pregnancy with Thomas Jefferson, and he was about 46 years old. So Hemings was both underage by today's standards and his property. Ariana's classmate and co-performer Cassandra Rubio explains why she wanted to do a piece on Hemming.
So I'm all about women empowerment. So whenever there's a chance where I could speak on behalf of a woman who was dehumanized, I definitely wanted to take that chance to write a piece where her name would come to life.
Desires and hopes for a better life.
For me and my kids of six, even though two died, do you know how much I've cried?
Tears that scream my story that nobody knows, because this identity was chosen. Sally Hemmings, that is my name.
Organizers say Sally Hemmings is one of the most popular figures in the curriculum for students. But what else is in this curriculum?
We really truly believe that the best way to learn about history is to actually read the words of the people who were living at that time.
Amy DeChristina is manager of the Hamilton Education Program, aka EduHam. She says the curriculum provides students access to more than 300 primary sources online, such as letters from George Washington, Phyllis Wheatley poems, and news articles from that era. And there are voices from Native Americans and African Americans too.
So we wanted to make sure that the curriculum that we were offering to these students who are, you know, I would say mostly students of color, like you said, from Title I schools, that they were seeing themselves reflected in history.
The curriculum study guide explains how Hamilton creator Lin-Manuel Miranda took history, analyzed it, and wrote songs that spoke to him. Nathan Martinez is a student and musician at Tulare Western High, which is south of Fresno. He says that usually he doesn't retain as much history from his classes, but after listening to the Hamilton soundtrack...
The story was told through music, and for me, music is memorable. Music is a story in itself. You don't even need words to, like, feel it. And so it was almost revolutionary, the idea of learning history through music.
And students are learning how history is messy and complex, like people. And historians don't always get it right.
Ben, I found you. Alexandra Hamilton. Seductress, homewrecker, harlot. Call me what you will. My love for you burns still. No one knows of that thrill. One that only your love could fulfill. Your love.
That's Nathan's classmate, Christina Venegas.
And those delicate caresses.
She's exploring the often untold story of Hamilton's mistress, Mariah Reynolds. And on the keys, that's Nathan.
Are you aware of who I am? Where my story began?
Hamilton eventually admitted the affair publicly. Christina appreciates learning about the imperfections of historical figures.
We see these figures as really amazing people. Nothing can go wrong with them. They're perfect. They're amazing. And it's shocking to me that we never get that other side of the story in a normal classroom. And I think that the exposure to it now, it's good for younger generations to see it and to know every part of the story.
I was younger than you are now.
These days, Confederate flags and statues of historical figures are coming down while some people are demanding they be protected. In this era of racial protest, a pandemic, and the Trump presidency, I wonder how future playwrights and composers would tell this story.
And even now I lie awake, knowing history has its eye.
In San Francisco, I'm Janae Darden for Cross Currents.
History has its eyes on me.
That was KALW's Janae Darden. You can learn a little Oakland history and watch her documentary called Where is East Oakland? We've got it up on our website, KALW.org.
When I was young and dreamed of glory, you have no control. Who lives, who dies, who tells your story? I know that we can win. I know that greatness lies in you, but remember from here on in.
Now it's time for our weekly Sonic Getaway. It's a new edition of the Golden Gate Parkcast. Today we're taking you into the park just west of the bison paddock. Ready? Here we go. We're continuing to head gently downhill toward the ocean, and we're getting close now, less than a mile to go. We cross over Chain of Lakes Drive. This connects the Richmond District to the north of the park, to the Sunset District on the south. And as we pass, just to our right is the simply named North Lake. You can see and hear so many birds here. Warblers, chickadees, and swallows. Red-tailed hawks soar overhead. Snowy egrets and great blue herons stalk prey in the shallow waters. This peaceful place is an ornithologist's wonderland. While birders delight in wandering the park, it's also a nice place to be a kid. Here's one learning how to ride a bike.
Keep going, you're doing it,
We're walking through this urban forest, and the trees have gotten especially thick to our right. Look closely, and you'll see there's a golf course in there. Now, a lot of people who live in San Francisco don't even know that. But there it is, 9 holes that welcome people of all skill levels, unfussy and lovely. In fact, Golf Magazine recently said it's one of the best small courses in the country, another hidden gem of Golden Gate Park. But we're not here to play golf today. We're targeting a different sport. And just past the course's parking lot on 47th Avenue, just a couple of blocks from the beach, we've arrived at our destination. Luisa Cardoza is here to tell us about it.
If you've ever been to the Outside Lands Music Festival at the Polo Fields on the other side of Golden Gate Park, the archery range would probably fit in one corner. There are 8 large targets set up, each about 10 feet apart, and standing at varying distances from the main path at the edge of the range. I'm here with Scott Bullard, certified archery coach, and we are about to shoot some arrows.
Down relaxed. Raise up. Draw back.
1, 2, let go.
Bullard works at the San Francisco Archery Shop about 10 blocks from the park and gives lessons almost daily. A lot of people are into archery these days as the sport has become so visible in the pop culture. There's Merida from the Disney movie Brave, Clint Barton and Oliver Queen from the comic books Hawkeye and Green Arrow, and of course, Katniss.
Katniss Everdeen?
The stakes are certainly not as high here in the park as they are in the Hunger Games, but honing your skills takes just as much patience and a lot of practice shots.
And that might be best phrased as forming an association between the feeling of your shot and the result on the target.
In other words, knowing what it feels like to land that arrow every time. Archery is a lot more physical than folks might think. During my lesson, I become very aware of my core, which supports my upper back muscles, my neck, and shoulder blades. Those muscles help me raise the bow and have an open rather than collapsed stance.
Archery is an endurance sport, so you want that last arrow to be as good as the first.
People have been shooting arrows at targets here in Golden Gate Park for over 130 years, and there's a wide variety of folks who use the range, from recreational shooters to seasoned bow hunters. After a few more practice shots, Bullard decides to shoot some arrows on his own, so I take a walk around the range to see who else is practicing. The first person I meet is a local beginner, 11-year-old Dorothy Holt.
We started coming out here because I got a target and stuff like that. It was really, really fun to do. Yeah! I hit that time.
Dorothy is one of many young women who've started coming to the range in recent years. I ask her if archery is something she wants to pursue as a sport.
I just want to keep going at it, be able to pick up a bow and arrow and shoot.
I keep walking and bump into David Chan.
Hi there. Are you David?
If you spend any time here at the range, you'll probably bump into him too. Chan is head coach of the local chapter of the Junior Olympics Archery Development Program, known as the JOAD. He's also one of the volunteers who maintains the targets.
When we were using hay bales, the bales would last about 3 months, and then we'd have to replace the whole bale.
They're now made of rolled up window screening, encased in wooden boxes, and covered in plastic burlap. But they still need a lot of maintenance. The fire department donates expired fire hose to use as protective edging.
If you hit steel with an arrow, it'll shatter the arrow. So we put the covering on it to help protect somebody. Try to protect the arrow from getting destroyed. And it hits the steel bar.
And speaking of destruction, the archery range is completely unregulated. I asked Chan about the delicate dance of allowing people to manage their own experiences. He says the biggest problem is when people shoot broadhead arrows, which are highly destructive hunting arrows.
We labeled all the signs with no broadheads allowed, and we still find broadheads in the bales, and they just destroy the bales way faster than anything else.
They were designed for war and have sharp blades that tear up the targets almost instantly. So what happens when Chan sees a shooter using these forbidden arrows?
When someone's holding a weapon like that, you do not confront them. Most of the rangers have given us their personal cell phone numbers so that we can call them directly.
Most people, though, follow the rules. Some regulars, like Patrick Hutchins, even have a favorite spot.
Like that's actually our favorite bale, is the just natural hay, because the arrows, they stick in there and they stay at that angle. With the other bales, sometimes if, you know, the middles get eaten out of them, and so arrow will go in and it'll just sag, and we've shot our own arrows by the side, you know, and broadsided them.
Occupational hazard.
Yeah, exactly. Cost of the hobby.
Before I pack up for the day, I decide to take one last shot. I stand with an open stance, draw back my arrow, and aim.
Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah.
Bullseye.
That piece was produced by Luisa Cardosa. It's part of our podcast made in honor of Golden Gate Park's 150th anniversary. You can subscribe to the Golden Gate Park cast and listen to every episode on the tour. Go to klw.org/subscribe. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Bay Area authors have had to cancel launch parties and book tours because of the coronavirus, so we're bringing them to you in this series we're calling New Arrivals. Today we hear from Mill Valley author Heather Young reading from her new book, The Distant Dead.
It's a literary mystery about a murder in the Nevada desert, a young boy with too many secrets, a man on the run from his past, and a woman trying to reclaim her life from tragedy and guilt. In this passage, Sal, the young boy, shows a local firefighter the body he found on his way to the school bus from the remote ranch where he lives. Jake looked at Sal. The boy's eyes were closed, his shoulders drawn in tight. "Is it down there?" Sal nodded without opening his eyes. "Wait here." Jake pressed one hand against his belly, tucked in his shirt, and walked into the wash. When he reached the grove of trees, he didn't see the math teacher right away. He saw the careful ring of stones that made the fire pit and the ashes piled in the center. Around it lay trees that had grown and died and fallen, their corpses blackened in the long, quiet decay of desert things. At first, Jake took the math teacher's body for one of these. Only when he saw the empty vodka bottle and the children's jump rope did he see what was left of the man. Then Jake, too, closed his eyes.
That was Mill Valley author Heather Young reading from her new book, The Distant Dead. Find information about that and more books at kalw.org/newarrivals. Today's Cross Currents team includes Vivian Bossieu-Skinner, Sarah Lai Sterlin, Lisa Morehouse, and Marissa Ortega-Welch. Our engineers are Tariq Foda and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.